Well, I suppose for people around Kildare who know nothing about Sudan, Sudan's the third largest country in Africa by area. It's East African. You could fit all of Germany, France, Spain, Portugal and the UK into Sudan and still have space. It's that large a country, 47 million people. They've had a conflict there, a civil war, since April 2023. Next Tuesday is the second anniversary. And in the meantime, that's caused huge humanitarian crisis. 30 million people in need of humanitarian assistance, 11 million people forced from their homes. Almost 4 million of those have left the country into neighbouring countries, which are some of the poorest countries in the world, the likes of South Sudan and Chad. And it's getting very little coverage, and yet it's a huge, huge humanitarian crisis.
Yeah, I mean, those figures that you mentioned are just staggering. 30 million people in need of humanitarian aid. And what are you seeing then on the ground and the impact that this is having on people in Sudan?
Yeah, so we went out to South Sudan, which is a neighbouring country, because Sudan, we bring in journalists out to try and cover the story. It's not a safe place to bring journalists into. The war is raging and it's fairly full on around the country. So we decided we'd bring them up to the South Sudan-Sudan border. To talk to people fleeing, people crossing the border, to talk to them and also to see the huge humanitarian crisis. Over 1 million people have crossed into South Sudan. And that is one of the poorest countries in the world. And they've taken 1 million people. So we went up to talk to them. I suppose when we arrived in this very, very dusty border village, the first thing we went into the concerned clinic we saw was a tent over to the right, isolated from the rest of the camp and sealed off by red and white tape. And that was a cholera tent. So cholera is raging in these communities. Cholera is spread by dirty water. There's about 10,000 people in that village. There's two wells and a river and no latrines. And cholera is ripping through the community. And so they had this isolation tent for people with cholera. Went in and met a lady there whose 10-year-old daughter was with her, very, very sick with cholera. Cholera can kill you in 24 hours. And she's very, very worried. This woman had 9 children. And when you listen to her story and think about the misery she's gone through, she had previously left South Sudan. There was a civil war there in between 2013 and 2018. So she fled the war in South Sudan, went into Sudan. Now she's fleeing a second civil war, come back into South Sudan, and now her children have cholera. And as she said to me at that stage, you know, they were robbed along the road as they were travelling back. She said, I have nothing. So we saw that kind of misery. Then you go down into the community at the crossing. And concern is kind of, we would be vaccinating, we'd be weighing people and checking the children. About a quarter of the children crossing are malnourished. Also vaccinating them, supporting those in the community who can be supported. The more sick children are transferred about an hour away into a stabilisation centre. Some of the children there are in desperate state. I met a girl. They told us she was 9 months old. And certainly looking at it, Owen, if a child here in Ireland, you compare it to a 3 or 4 month-old child, she had an arm like width of a pencil. Very, very sick. Many of those children are not just malnourished, they also have other complications, pneumonia or malaria. If cholera would probably kill those children at that stage. But there's multiple complications and they're being stabilised by the concerned clinic there. So there's a lot of suffering. I suppose what really struck me is that you could see the people who were hungry and were suffering. That much was evident. But when you got to talk to people, other people, that you realise the true scale of the misery and the horror that people had gone through, so what they'd fled. We met a lady who had come down from Khartoum. She had 3 children aged between 16 months and 6 years. It's a 1,000-kilometre journey down from Khartoum, the Sudan capital, down to the border. You say, well, why would you take that journey? Her mother and father had been killed. Her brother and sister had been burnt alive in a house. And they just fled. And the journey, she said, they were robbed. They'd left with kind of whatever they could carry. They were robbed along the road and terrified. Met another man from Darfur, an English student. And again, his family he described the village he'd left as just full of killing, robbing, threats. Mm. He took him 2 weeks to come around the truck. He said he didn't sleep for the 2 weeks. They were beaten and attacked on the road. And that some of those are the lucky people, because one of the services that concerns provided is psychosocial support. And we talked to a couple of the social workers in a number of the centres we visited. And it's not just the physical violence that they're counselling people for, but it's the gender-based violence. There's a huge level. If anybody Googles Sudan, you'll see the huge number of reports. Amnesty have come out with another report this week of gender-based violence. It's been used as a weapon of war. So the counsellors would tell us about people who had been raped, sexually assaulted, beaten, attacked, stabbed, shot, faces cut, burnt with acid. We spoke to a lady who had been kept as a sex slave while her husband and children children escaped, and she was kept for a couple of weeks before she escaped herself. So real, real horror. And these councillors are doing remarkable work. And, you know, we were in a small community, and I suppose that the thing that really shocked me is when we were leaving, you said to the social worker, well, how many people, this is a tiny community of where the border crossing, how many people would you deal with this kind of counselling? He said about 150 a week.
Wow.
In this small tent. They come through and he talks to them and counsels them.
It's hard to comprehend, really, isn't it? I mean, I've only ever seen documentaries or videos and photographs of what's happening in Sudan, and it's shocking, but I would imagine being there and seeing it firsthand is just kind of incredible in the worst possible way.
It is, and it's amazing how resilient people are, and it's even the way they tell these stories. I'm convinced that they're still grieving, they're still in deep trauma. They tell you these stories very matter-of-factly, and it's only when you go away and you think about what you've just heard and what people have fled, what people are fleeing, that you realise the difference that, you know, organisations like Concern and people in Kildare funding and donating to those organisations, the difference it can make. And it also makes you realise how privileged and how, just by luck of birth, you happen to be born in Ireland, how lucky you are, because these people have done nothing to bring on the kind of horrors that they're experiencing.
You mentioned some of the supports that Concern is giving to these people, but, I mean, you're doing all you can. How much, is that just the tip of the iceberg then? How much more help do these people out in Sudan need?
I think there is tip of the iceberg. I know the United Nations have put a figure about $4.1 billion is needed for the humanitarian response within Sudan. Up to last week, they had about 10% of that had been paid up by the international community. So the humanitarian response is completely underfunded. We're doing the best we can, you know, for the communities we're working in. Certainly, there's a lot more help needed. I think the international community, there's a big conference next Tuesday to mark the second anniversary in London. The international community needs to step up to protect humanitarian supplies, to protect humanitarian workers working with this, and it's a very dangerous country to be working in. And also to get the diplomatic effort together to try and stop the fighting, because until the fighting stops, you know, you're really only, it's a sticking plaster and helping people who are in need now, but until the fighting stops, you're not moving, you're not making any serious progress.
Mm. And generally speaking as well, what always I admire from people who are in those situations is they still remain positive, and they have a positive outlook on life, you know, and they're kind of looking at, well, if we can overcome this conflict, we still have dreams, we still want to go to school, to college, to get jobs. It's not their fault where they're born or where they've been brought up.
Do you know, Owen, what struck me when you kind of think about these things and you come home? These people, while their experiences and where they're living is very different, it's 40 degrees heat, it's very, very rural, it's very dusty, they are no different to the people living in Nate, New British High today. They have the same aspirations. They want to look after, first and foremost, they want to look after their children. They want to be safe. They want clean water to drink. They're no different to us, except a lot of the things we get, we just take for granted. But their ambition for their children, their desire. One of the social workers said to me, look, they were counselling people for, you know, the physical violence, the gender-based violence. And she's also the trauma of poverty. And I said, what do you mean by that? It's just that people, women in particular, who are traumatised by not being able to feed their children three meals a day. That is traumatising them as well. So they are, in many ways, no different to us. They just happen to be experiencing horrific things that we're not.
Why do you think it doesn't get as much coverage, what's happening in Sudan? Is it because it's over there?
I think it is. I think there's a lot on the international agenda at the moment between Gaza and Ukraine and all the other distractions we've had in the last few days, which have nothing to do with development issues. I think it's there's certainly an issue with journalists getting in. It's very difficult to get in. It's not a very safe place to be working from. I think there is a geopolitical thing, that it's not important geopolitically to Europe, and so therefore it's not on the agenda. But it is the world's largest humanitarian crisis. And I think, you know, certainly the predictions are if we don't address this, it's going to get worse. At the moment, we have about 600,000 people who are experiencing famine. There are five areas that are experiencing famine, another 17 areas within Sudan. A lot of that data collection is quite poor because of the conflict. But the predictions are it will get a lot worse. There's other things, even when you talk on the ground about the cholera, it's currently the dry season. I know our own team there, we're very conscious. We're putting in wells and we're providing water purification tablets to try and address this cholera issue. But if we don't get on top of this in the next few weeks, we're going to be in real trouble because the rains arrive in May. Once we have a lot more rain, a lot more stagnant water, cholera spreads through dirty water, we will have a much, much more difficult challenge because the community is already weakened by hunger. If you put cholera on top of that, you've got a real, it's a real recipe for disaster.
Mm.
But I suppose we would like to thank the people who have donated to us. And I think one of the opportunities which is to say, look, we have many, many donors and regular donors in Clare. We'd like to thank them for that. Anybody who does want to help our work, concern.net, or if they want to ring a phone number, some people don't have access to a phone or a computer. So it's 0818 410 510. So it's 0818 410 510. We need every euro we can get. Certainly, I think of the words of our late, one of our early CEOs, Father Gus Van Ooken, who used to say, and it just really rang in my mind when we were in South Sudan, do as much as you can for as many as you can, for as well as you can for as long as you can. And I think that certainly is a mantra we need in Sudan at the moment.